You are listening to inspiring stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary stuff. Welcome to the Doolanders.
Hit it!
That's what I'm talking about.
Wait!
Okay, now, from the beginning.
Hit it, boys.
Well, here we are, Blake. This is episode 38. I'm not sure I've got the energy for it.
Why?
Starving.
Oh. What? When was the last time you ate?
Well, a couple of hours ago, but I'm starving. You know what I feel like?
Oh, don't say it.
Dumplings.
Oh, dumplings. I was not expecting that. Why dumplings?
Well, we needed a connection from the intro to this week's guest. And Lucy Chen of Chen Foods, they do amazing dumplings.
Yeah, they do.
In fact, when Lucy joined us, she bought around boxes of them, didn't she?
She sure did, and my kids have subsequently destroyed that packet. Packets.
Packets, yeah. Yeah, Subway. Tell us a little bit about Lucy, Nick.
Well, this is really a story of multi-generational family businesses. That's really what this story is. And, you know, Lucy and her sister were not really seen as the natural successors to the business for a variety of reasons that you'll find out. But that's the way it has panned out, with mum and dad starting to step aside from the main business and Lucy and her sister taking the reins.
Yeah, absolutely has bucked the trend when it comes to taking on family businesses in Asian cultures.
She sure
generally
has.
It's the son. This time around, it's the daughters. Here is Lucy and her wonderful, wonderful dumplings.
You can't hear the dumplings though, can you, Blake?
You can taste them.
Here's Lucy. Blake, do you like stories of people doing?
I love stories of people doing, Nick.
Well, if you out there like stories of people doing and you want us to make more stories of people doing, then like this podcast, subscribe and tell your mates, because the more people we have listening, the more episodes we can make, and that's better for everyone out there who's doing or wants to do.
And as Arnold would say, do it.
I thought he said I'll be back.
Hey, Lucy, welcome to the Doolanders. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you going?
I am fantastic. What day is it?
Wednesday.
Yes, it is. Correct answer. Yes, it is Wednesday. Geez, this week for me has certainly dragged on. How are you, Nick?
I'm good, thanks, Blake.
How's it week going for you?
Yep. Same as when I saw you yesterday, the day before that.
Yeah, nice. Hey, Lucy, you've had an amazing journey. But first up, tell us and tell our listeners, what do you do?
So I run a Asian food business that my parents started in 1982, so around 40 years ago, with my sister.
Do you?
Yes.
How, your parents started that business in Australia?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Tell us how that came to pass.
So my parents came from Vietnam. They came as refugees to Australia, and they were both working, I guess, really hard, working both in factory jobs. And because Dad was previously a businessman, he always wanted to start his own business. So when they saved up enough money, they started bringing Asian products to Australia.
Right, right. Imported them from?
Yeah, imported from Vietnam and China.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the Housing Commission in Richmond, and that's where Mum and Dad started the business.
Mm.
Back in those days, you know, Victoria Street now is, you know, a bit of a Vietnamese hub with all the restaurants and so on. Back then there was nothing like that, and I remember going to eat pho, Vietnamese noodle soup, at some lady's house.
I love pho.
Is it annoying when people say pho?
Yeah, so annoying.
Oh, really? Well, I nearly went pho. But then I heard fur and I went, is it fur? It must be fur. Okay.
Yeah, so we used to go to some lady's house and we used to pay, I remember paying to have fur.
Nice.
Yeah.
Back on the business before we get into your childhood. So, Chen Foods, you talked to us a bit about the team, the business, who you sell to and through.
Yeah, so my sister and I took over the business in 2015 and we sell to Coles, Woolworths, IGAs and, you know, independent groceries. And we sell the brand that I guess people would know is called Mr. Chen's, and mostly dumplings, but we also do frozen meals and we also do noodles and sauces as well.
How often, you've got four kids, how often do your kids eat the food that you make?
They would probably say too much, but we eat it regularly, and I think it's an easy I guess a mantra of ours that I wouldn't sell anything that I wouldn't feed my kids. So yeah. It's quite, you know, easy to think that.
Well, yeah, that's right. And your husband just says, can you pick up something on the way home? And of course you can. Hey, how was...
What from the 400 things right. that we sell?
How was 2020? Talk to us about life at work through the pandemic.
Well, I found 2020 quite hard. I think I did the numbers and it was like Melbourne did 103 days worth of lockdown, 26 weeks of homeschooling, pretty full on when you've got four kids.
That is full on.
I think it was good that we were in food because that was considered an essential service, and so I was technically still allowed to go to the office, which I did as much as I could. But because we're a real growing business, we had to bring on new people. So our team is 25 now, but during the last 12 months, we brought on 10 people, which is quite a lot. I found it really, really tricky because everyone was working remotely, and I felt like a bit like a stand-up comedian every morning on those Zoom calls where, you know, trying to get the team spirit going up, trying to get everyone keeps the spirit up and trying to think of new ways to do that, either through the Resilience Project or a steps competition or let's do plates painting, all this kind of stuff. And I think towards the end of the year, I just crashed. I just, no more energy left.
You'd run out of energy.
Yeah.
What's the plates project? Or the Resilience Project? What's the plates thing? What was that?
Everyone painted their own plate, and then we had a competition too, and everyone voted, and the best plate won the first, second, and third. So try to do something different, you know.
I like it.
And what was the winning plate?
Oh, it was a surprise actually. One of the girls who knew that she had these artistic abilities, she drew like a mountain that looked a bit like Mount Fuji with some cherry blossoms and stuff. So yeah. I think she even surprised herself, actually. Should be here. Yeah.
I like it. So scaling through 2020, like you've hired 10 people.
Yep.
You're in charge of the place. You're chief energy provider, ideas person. You were saying a little earlier before we came on air that, you know, by November you'd had it. Like you'd run out of...
I was cooked.
You were cooked. How did you keep yourself, full of energy and there to grow the business and inspire the team? What did you do to look after you? Plus run your household, four kids. Who was doing the homeschooling? Was that you or your husband Toby? Or
no, so my husband did a little bit, but we also had a babysitter as well.
Sure.
I think I probably didn't balance my energy enough. I think I gave it all to work and not enough to home and to my personal self. And I always think of, if you've watched Finding Nemo, the Dory character, how she always says, keep moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt a bit like that. I felt like I just had to keep going. And then, you know, towards the end of the year, like I said, I crashed and I was able then to take a break and go on holiday. So,
yeah,
recharge.
Nice. Okay, let's delve back into how you got to where you are today. So you touched on you spent some of your time growing up in Richmond in housing commission flats. Do you remember a lot about that?
Yeah, just I remember going to Richmond West Primary School, and I remember because Mum and Dad were working a lot, my grandparents used to pick us up from school and drop us off and things like that. But I also think one of the things that I really recall is we used to make these cassette tapes when we were growing up, and because although I don't remember it, English wouldn't have been my first language, I just really did have a really broad Asian accent, yeah. And I remember listening to those tapes and thinking, but you know, we had fun. I'm one of four kids, and we were all close, and we played together and stuff like that.
Your parents worked super hard to provide a future for you, and in terms of what their outlook for you was, do you remember what that was, and were you aligned with what their hopes and dreams were for you?
I think, like many immigrants to Australia, that they just wanted a better life, and a better life to them meant education, meant getting a job, and then with my family in particular, it meant getting married, having kids, having a family, that kind of thing. And I think they more so in our family, because I'm one of four, and I've got two brothers and sister, and I really felt like they did treat the girls differently to the boys. Like the girls were the ones who needed to go and get married.
The boys, not so much.
No, not so not so much, which I guess is inherently sexist, really. But
yep.
Yeah.
Do you talk to them about that now?
No, I don't really.
You might have to now.
I know. I wonder what they would say.
Well,
I think I've made jokes to them about it. You know, like when I was growing up, it'd be like, you know, girls don't run, girls don't yell like you're yelling all the time, that kind of thing. So, yeah, but I think, you know, now that I've got my own family and husband and kids and stuff like that, don't know.
Oh, well, you can ask them to listen back to this, and then you can have a conversation with them. So they had that path in their eyes, are working hard for you to get married and have four kids. Were you aligned with that as a, you know, you think back to your teenage years and going through school, was it clear to you what you wanted to do when you, in inverted commas, grew up?
I feel like it's a really hard one because of their influence growing up. I felt like what they wanted and what I wanted became the same thing. So then I would say yes, because that's what I felt like I wanted was to find a husband, get married, and have children. So yes, effectively, I did. I always say that I'm like the Asian parents' dream child. I went and did well at school, went and got a really good uni degree, went and got a good job, and then got married, had kids, and then that's, I guess that's when things didn't go to what they wanted after that.
Yeah.
But you're very aware of it. Is that something that's happened in more recent times?
Yeah, I think so. Over the last couple of years, I was just reflecting, maybe turning 40, probably midlife crisis, you know, that kind of thing.
40. What I'd give to be 40. so you were aligned with...
Yeah.
So you wanted four kids. You knew that was the path for you.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll come to that in a minute.
Yep.
But talk to us about, your coming out of school. You headed off to uni. You just started. Yes. What did you decide to study?
I studied commerce and engineering just
because
you're good, when you're good at maths, you think, I'm going to do engineering.
Seems like a fair idea. Yeah. Why not? Okay.
And did you have any idea of what you wanted to do with that commerce and engineering degree, or is it just find a husband, have kids?
No, find a good job first, then find a husband. I just always, I guess, had in my mind that I had to find a job and, you know, get a good job.
And did that happen?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, I feel like I've been very lucky in that sense. I did well at uni and found a good job.
Where was that?
I did programming at NAB for a year, and then I went and worked at Telstra So it was aligned with my course. I did engineering, electrical engineering, telco. So that was my dream job from the course that I did.
And what was happening at that same time whilst you were doing that and pursuing the career that you/your parents wanted you to pursue? What was happening with the business at this time?
So mum and dad were still running the business. The business was, focused a lot on Asian grocery stores and restaurants.
And what sort of food were they producing for those Asian grocery stores?
So quite ethnic food. So a lot of things like rice paper and pickled foods. And then I think a bit later, then they started doing things like frozen dumplings and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. We were talking earlier and you're saying that, you know, you landed your dream job.
Yep.
Based on the degree that you got, and you enjoyed your career, but perhaps it wasn't where you were supposed to be. What does that mean? It didn't feel right, or?
Yeah, I just remember always speaking to my friends or my sister or my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, saying, "Oh, I don't know if this job's for me. Maybe she'll go back and I'll go back and study med. I'll go back and do this." Or I just had always had. I didn't know what it was that was right for me, but I know that he got sick of hearing me say, "I'm going to go back and study med," or "I'm going to go back and do something else."
What did he say?
I don't know. I think he just got used to me and my ongoing just inability to sit still and just be. So he just kept saying, yeah, you should do that. Yeah, you should do that. So, but I know I didn't.
Right.
I didn't know.
Right. That sounds like false agreement from your husband. So tell us, how did it come to pass that you decided to cycle around Tasmania, and tell us about who you met along the way?
Yeah, so I've always loved the outdoors, and I've always loved cycling. So my mate and I decided one day to do the Great Tassie Bike Ride, which is like 10 days, 600 kilometres, where you camp and everything like that. So I went and did that, and I met my husband on the ride.
Love at first sight, or?
No, not really. We were just mates, and we exchanged phone numbers and email addresses, and then when we came back to Melbourne, I went to Perth for work, and then we kind of had an email friendship, where he apparently says that he took hours to write me an email, whereas I just bang it out because when I got back after a couple of months, we got together after that.
Yeah, nice one. So you met Toby. And your parents have said, you know, go to school, get a good education.
Yep.
Go to uni.
Yep.
Make sure you get good marks.
Yeah.
You meet Toby.
Yep. Get married.
Get married straight away.
Straight away.
Right.
Couple of months in.
Yeah.
And it put a strain on our relationship because, in their mind, it's like, you know, they didn't really believe in dating. They didn't believe in moving out. They didn't really believe in any of that, moving out together, that kind of thing. And so, from early on, they put a bit of strain on me more than Toby. And Toby was very, very understanding. You know, he didn't think I was too much of a psycho. And then, but we did date for a couple of years before we got married.
How'd you fend off the constant pressure?
I don't know. I just kind of try to deal with it, and I tried not to. Toby would probably say a different thing, but I tried not to. I tried to shield him from it, but it was hard.
Yeah. Okay. You applied for an AusAid program and headed overseas for a year. How was that?
Yeah. So when Toby and I we got engaged, and then we got married, and it was the first time I'd moved out of home as well. So I moved out of being at home to moving in with Toby and being married, and then I applied to do a AusAid program in China, which is to do volunteer work for a year, and we went to China and did that, and it was the first year of our marriage, and it was very interesting for me the adjustment, living out of home, living in a different country, living with my new husband, but we had a ball. We cycled all around China. We were able to do lots of exciting things, meet lots of great people.
Cool. How far did you cycle? Did you actually work out throughout this course of the year? We've done 85 laps of Tasmania, or
no? Actually, I don't know. We did cycle down, not all the way down to the border of Vietnam, and we cycled also close to the border of Tibet as well. Oh, yeah, so cool. Just some magnificent scenery. Amazing. Beautiful. Yeah.
What are the roads like for cyclists in China?
I reckon they're not as bad, but if in the car, it's a bit scary. Yeah, because it was a really nice time. It was amazing.
So since you were a girl, you've had this vision that you're going to have four kids, and that's your lot in life. And so you come back from China, and not too long after that, you had your first child in Liam. Is that right?
Yeah. So we came back, and I was pregnant. So I went back to Telstra for a couple of months, and then went on leave. Yeah.
So you've dreamed of having kids. Tribe of them, well, tribe four. Was it everything that you thought it would be?
No. So I think very shortly after I had Liam, I think it was eight weeks, I can't remember. I was like, oh, now, okay, what next now? What now? And very quickly didn't feel like, I don't know what the feeling was, just I guess not complete. I felt like there was something else, there was something more, and I didn't feel like it was more kids. I knew I would have more kids, but I didn't, I felt like I had to do something else.
Okay. So what did you do?
So I spoke to my mum and then joined the family business part-time. They created one of the offices into a playroom, and so I brought Liam in, and so it felt like a win-win. I was able to still, you know, just help out with whatever I could, bit of marketing, a couple of websites, and then mum and dad were able to see Liam while still working, and he could also spend time with my sister and brother as well. So yeah, I did that for a bit.
So what was the draw for you to go and work at the family business at that stage?
I think the flexibility that I could just bring Liam in, and then also still do something with my brain, and you know, contribute somehow.
It's a big jump from Telstra to family business.
Yes, and it did take a while to get used to it. A couple of years to change my mindset, and because I kept thinking, oh yeah, no, I'll just go back to Telstra, for quite a few years.
And that never happened.
No, no.
Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the thrust and parry of working day in, day out within the family business? And I guess in that early stage, although it was great flexibility and your parents got to see Liam, and did you feel like you were perhaps more invested than you were at Telstra or not?
To be honest, probably not while I was doing part-time.
Mm.
So it was more just something else to do, because I was driving myself and my husband crazy with staying at home. So
what does that look like? You just like to do stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I just called him a lot. And I feel like his the receptionist at his work was just like, why is your wife calling again? Like, hi, honey, what are you doing? No. So I think I just had more energy and more something else that I wanted, you know, I wanted. So
yeah.
So I felt like, because that kind of part-time role wasn't that serious, I was a little bit invested, but not that invested. I think the investment came later when I took over the business.
Yeah, okay. But at that time, your brother was your parents' succession plan.
Yep.
But that plan at some stage became unstuck because your brother decided to head off and do something else.
Yep.
Talk us through how that all came to pass and what transpired from there.
Yeah, so since we were little, my parents were kind of grooming my brother. He's like the crown prince, you know, the eldest Asian son. So they were training him from age 13, 14. They would take him out to do sales with them. They would kind of pass on their knowledge and advice to him, and not really kind of talk to my sister and I about business, but they'd talk to him about business all the time. So he came and took over the business. And then when he wanted to do something else, they were quite upset. And then they were like, oh my God, who's going to run the business now? And at that time they were in their 60s, late 60s, and they needed to find someone to run the business. And at the time, Nancy, my sister, was working in the business for about 5 years, and I'd just been doing my part-time thing.
What was Nancy's role within the business?
She just did a bit of everything. The business was so small, so you kind of had to do everything. I'd been in the business just doing the part-time thing for a couple of years. And mum and dad were like, oh no, who's going to run the business? And it's almost like they looked around everywhere. They might have even offered the business to my younger brother. He was like, no, I'm doing my own thing. And then kind of as a last resort, they went, oh, okay, I suppose Nancy, Lucy, you guys can run the business. But to be fair to them, like I was onto my third child. He was 3 months old. Nancy had just had her first child. I knew I wanted to have another child. Nancy knew she wanted, you know, so they didn't think it was appropriate that we would take over the business. But we did.
How did that conversation come to pass? And do you remember it?
It was a lot of conversations. I think it was that a little bit that they didn't have any choice. And then there was a lot of worry behind it. Once the decision was made, there was a lot of I know that they talked between themselves a lot, and they were really worried about us and about what would happen.
About your ability to get the job done, or about the fact that you had conflicting priorities, like three kids and yeah. Nancy had a couple of kids, and or both?
That's a really good question. I think both.
Right.
I think both. And and to the point where I think in the Asian community, because you know, like I said, the son was you know, he was the face of the business, and they were trying to tell my brother, oh, you should come in just one day a week and sit in the office still and things like that, just to kind of keep that going. And I think, like I was saying, there was also a lady in the office who had been with us for quite a few years, 15 years, and she was like, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. Women shouldn't be leading businesses. And we're like, well, you know, thanks for the support, kind of. But yeah, so everyone was worried at the time.
How much doubt did that put in your mind about your ability to do it? Hearing everyone saying, yeah, but...
So I don't feel like we had doubt. So Nancy and I knew that we were both hardworking, and that we knew how to learn things. But I think first and foremost, we knew that we would work hard on the business.
So in your mind, you've taken hold of the reins, and you thought, yep. Talking to Nancy, you're going, okay, we've got this.
Yep.
That's pretty remarkable, I would think, given that for – you know, the vast majority of your life, and at that point in time, there was significant doubt.
Yeah.
Have you always had that self-belief that you could make stuff happen?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've always had the belief that I could do whatever I wanted, or at least give it a go.
So we've spoken to a bunch of people on this podcast, and often it's, you know, the, you know, that term that's bandied around a lot these days around imposter syndrome. And yep. So did you feel that at all, or you thought, nope, Nancy, you know, we've got this, we're going to make this thing, we're going to make it happen?
So I probably feel more imposter syndrome now than at the time, because at the time it just felt like there was so much that needed to be done, and we just went and did it. So I felt like we just got on with it, and we just worked really hard and put everything we could into getting the business going.
So what was different about the business then that's different to now?
So the business was, I guess, the business that we took over, mum and dad, was selling to a lot of the Asian grocery stores and restaurants. And then we had probably three lines in the major retailers, Coles and Woolworths. And then now we've got about 30 lines in Coles and Woolworths, so over 6 years.
And dealing with the big supermarkets is not quite as easy as the small independently owned Asian grocery? Yeah. Or is it? Or is it?
No. Yeah, no, completely different, yeah.
So tell us about that evolution, because that you just – you've covered 6 years in a sentence. So like that is – there's some amazing growth in all of that.
Yep.
So clearly you've got this can-do attitude. You're full of a truckload of energy.
Yep.
You've got it – you've picked it up in the shape that it was in and you've said, right.
Yep.
What'd you do next?
So when we were dealing with the Coles and Woolworths of the world, you know, they're not notoriously easy to deal with necessarily. We had a broker who would deal with them for us. And so I used to go on the sales calls with the broker, and I think I was a little bit lucky or fortuitous that I met one of the retailer buyers, and he said to me, come and see me and don't bring your broker. And we had this meeting, and he said to me, look, why don't you have a go at doing the sales? Why don't you you can just deal with me direct or help save on some of the costs. You know, we can work together. And that gave me the confidence to then stop using the broker. And I think that was probably the first big change that we had, where I started dealing with the retailers myself, but not having any experience.
So just before we go further than that, can you explain to our audience what a broker does?
Yep.
In the supply chain,
yep.
And the other person who, or how do you deal directly with a retailer?
So when you deal with the supermarkets to purchase your product, you normally deal with a buyer, and so a lot of companies deal with the buyers directly. But if you can't do that, then you can hire an intermediary person who is the broker. So then instead of me dealing with the buyer directly, the broker would deal with the buyer. And then he would come back and work. The broker would come back and work with me and get whatever questions answered or whatever information he needed. And then you know, deal with the buyer. So deal with the Coles and Woolies.
So what scenario do you use a broker versus going direct?
It could be a resource thing. It could be a knowledge thing. In our case, it was because we'd never really had dealt directly with the retailers before. And so we felt like we didn't understand how they worked, what they needed in terms of rebates, pricing, all that kind of stuff.
So it's infinitely more complex than you think from the outside. I just want to sell my product.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
And you're all of a sudden talking about commissions and fees.
And pricing and structure and merchandising and, yeah, just a lot of things.
So where on the shelves it goes, where in the freezer it goes, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And how complicated is that?
I feel like it is complicated, but you could learn it. So I think that was the first thing that happened, that the buyer had that chat to me, and then I took over those accounts myself. Nance and I took over the accounts together. And then I think the second thing that happened, which was our big aha moment, was Nance and I were speaking to a buyer, and they said, no, I'm not interested in taking whatever it is that you're pitching. And Nancy said, oh, okay, that's fine. And then I said, no, how about this format, or how about we change this pricing, or how about we do this? And then we Nancy and I just both looked at each other in that call and said, oh, my God, I'm a salesperson. And she was like, oh, my God, you're a salesperson. And so then I kind of found, I guess, my natural I felt like what was my natural – what I was good at and what I love doing. And I think when you can find those two things, you're in a pretty good spot, especially for work.
That is cool. So when you boil down what you're good at, what is it?
I feel like it's talking to people and selling products. Trying to push stuff to me. No, I do feel like it's talking to people and meeting people and building those relationships.
Yeah. So there's Liam.
Yep.
Declan.
Yep.
Thurston.
Yeah.
And
Alana,
you're trying to grow the business. You've found out, shit, I can sell stuff. I'm good at this.
Yep.
How are you managing the juggle?
So I think first and foremost, my husband is really, really supportive. Mm. He helps a lot, and he helps whenever he can, and comes home and, you know, helps a lot with the kids. My mum helped a little bit with the kids, and then ultimately we hired help as well. So
yep.
I definitely don't feel like I was able to do it all, and I don't know how other women, if they are doing it all, that they do it. Yeah. Just for the mind space, the coordination, you know, just, yeah.
So are the kids involved in the business at all? Like, do they come in and, like how old's Liam now?
He's 11.
Okay, I was going to say, does he come in and do part-time work?
Well, so they do in holidays they do come in and stick, you know, envelopes and things like that, because when we were growing up we did the same thing. We went in and carried boxes and drove the forklift legally, and you know that kind of thing, which they're doing the paired back version, which is sitting in an office and sticking labels.
Yeah, no forklifts.
No, they're not allowed out of the back. So.
Do you make them lick all of those envelopes?
Yeah. No, they're good. They like they? It. Yeah. They like coming
they
in.
They like to get involved?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what taught us the value of hard work and value of money, that we would go into the office and, I mean, go into the mum and dad's work and help out every school holidays. And
Are they still in the fascination phase, or are they kind of over the wow factor of seeing forklifts zipping around and...
No, like I think they're over it, but they're still interested in earning money, $5 a day or whatever it is.
Yeah,
the going rate is, yeah.
So talk to us about the growth.
Yep.
From where it was when you picked it up, when you and Nancy took the reins, to where it is today.
Yeah, so I guess taking over the accounts was the first thing, and then. After that, we had lots of ideas about what kind of products, Asian products, we wanted to bring to the market, and then I just kept going in there and getting. I laugh because there was one retailer that I went and saw the same buyer three times and got knocked back three times, and I just kept going. I just kept seeing them and talking to them until they took some of their product.
What changed their mind on that? Because the product hadn't changed.
I think it's a couple of things. One would be the different insights, and then kind of having a story behind why they would take it. And then we did do things like update packaging. We brought on a marketing consultant who really actually put some theory and strategy behind everything we did. And Meg, she now works for us full time. She's our GM of marketing, so she's been quite instrumental in our growth in the last couple of years too.
So you do notice the packaging differences between products. Yep. And pulling down the veil of secrecy. Is it often you find the exact same product, not in your lines, in other lines, like the black and gold and then the something other brand, is it actually the same products with different packaging?
Sometimes, I think. Sometimes I think you can't say definitely that they're all across the range like that, but I would definitely say that that in some cases it would be similar products.
And how different, because we're looking at a box of Mr. Chen's now, and we'll have all these pictures available on the episode page.
I'm hungry.
Yeah. What difference does it make, and how has the graphics and everything evolved on the packaging over time, and what difference have you seen that make on sales?
Well, I think we focus on our branding a lot, and I feel like that's where we're a little bit different to other brands, in that we're really invested in our marketing. So I think, I don't know if you guys shop at Asian grocery stores and so on, but the packaging there is quite different. It's a lot, definitely a more pared back and a lot less structured. So we've invested a lot in our brand, in our marketing, to make it stand out. And I think it's been able to help our sales and things.
Yeah. And I reckon you said yes just because you knew you were going to come back a fourth time, a fifth time, a sixth time, and a seventh time.
Yeah.
It's true, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I feel like I've got a couple of good relationships now though. So yeah, it's been a really
That's great.
It's been a really good good learning curve. It continues to be.
So how many people were in the business when you took over, and to how many people now?
So there was, I think, about seven people in the business. Mm-hmm. And that's including a couple of warehouse team members, And now there's 25.
25.
Yeah.
And have your offices had to change? Has your warehousing, storage, all that? Like,
yeah.
Talk to us about that growth.
So we've moved offices. We moved about 6 months ago. Previously, as the team was growing, we were sharing offices. So there would be like three or four people in an office. But now we've moved to an open office, which is great. And we've expanded our warehouse as well. So we've built a bigger freezer.
And how does food production work with that? Is it outsourced arrangement?
Yeah. So we work with contract manufacturers.
Yep. And at what point, is there a tipping point in the future where you think you'll manufacture in-house?
No, I don't. I think manufacturing is another complete different business, which I'm still trying to cope with the current business. So
that's for the kids to bring. Yeah. That's for Liam.
When you sit down and you talk to your parents these days, and you think back to the time when they were looking around, and right at there, you know, in front of them was you and Nancy, and you yep. weren't the anointed ones. When you talk to your parents now about what you've done with the business, what do they say?
So I don't know if this is Asian parents, but I'd say it's Asian parents because it's my parents. But
you're just going to generalise.
I'm going to generalise based on my one person's experience. There's a couple of sayings, and one of them that they always told us when we were growing up is that if I don't scold you enough, you're not going to grow big and strong. And then the other one was, and the idea behind that one is that, you know, I'm only telling you off so that you learn and grow, and because I love you, that's their way of showing love. And then the other one was, daughters don't count, which was a thing that they always used to say to Nancy and I, and then it just became a little bit of a running joke where every time I'd see them, I'd be like, hi, Dad, he'd be like, oh, daughters don't count, as almost like a greeting. And the idea behind that was that he tells us a story about how, you know, back in the day in China or in Asian countries, that you would be on a farm, and so if you had children, then you'd only count the boys because the boys are the ones who would be able to do the work and the labour. And he'd say, oh, I've got a friend who, you know, has 10 children, but they only say they have five, or because they don't count the girls, or that kind of thing. So that became a bit of a running joke. But then now I feel like he says it and he's proud, and even though he doesn't necessarily say those I'm proud of you kind of words, because I don't feel like it's part of the way he's been brought up and his generation and culture. So I do feel like he's proud, but I wouldn't say that he has said it expressed, you know. So
you've got the vibe.
Yeah, I know. That was a really long-winded way to say I feel like he's proud of me, but he hasn't quite.
What you should do is talk to little brother, get him a t-shirt made saying daughters do count.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
You're welcome. Jeremy, get on it.
What's your advice to business owners out there, young women, young men for that matter, who are trying to grow a business? What would your tips be?
I think at the heart of all businesses is hard work, and I feel like unless you get a really, really lucky break, there's no business that scales or grows or is successful without some kind of hard work at some stage. So I think that's the first one, and then the second one would be, I guess, just don't take no for an answer. And I think that's what people talk about when they talk about hustling, and you know, I felt like that's what we were doing for a couple of years there.
You still hustling?
So we've got a national account manager who we brought on about 8 months ago, and I'm still trying to work out what my role is now. But I do feel like I need to get back to hustling. I think that's what kind of where I belong.
That's your favourite thing to do, is it? Or
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and if the national account manager is doing the hustling, what are you doing?
Don't know. I'm just trying to build other parts of the business to make sure we've got a sustainable business, but I want to go back to hustling.
Okay. Do you have an idea of what you're going to focus on?
Nancy and I would love to build the business so that we can step back a little and work kind of on the business and not in the business. You hear people say that a lot. and then have the choice to decide what we want to do in the business. So I've said that to her, like, you know, her and I are both co-CEOs, but is that really where my strengths are? I'm not sure. I think maybe my strengths are more selling.
Yep. Growth. When you consider how all-consuming your own business is, and, yep, you know, Nick's had his own business for how long?
18 years.
It's a long time.
It is a long time.
Yeah.
I look good for 60, don't I?
When you consider it's always on,
yep,
how do you look after you? How do you switch off, make sure that you're in the moment for, you know, Toby and all the kids? And
yeah.
Is that easy, or is that something that comes naturally for you, or do you work on it?
No, I think it's really hard, and I think I try to be deliberate with it. So one of the things is, for example, my son Thurston wants me to drop him off a couple of days a week at school, and so then I just block out that time and I just do it. I just try my best to do it so that I am keeping that promise and making sure that I am staying connected with him. And then we all have problems with our phones. I'm not sure if you guys do, in phone addiction. I try to not look at my phone, and we try to do things together. We do a lot of board games and things like that. But it all has to be me saying I'm going to dedicate that time. Otherwise, I could spend all my spare time working on the business.
Yeah. Talk to us about progress, not perfection.
So when you're growing and you're growing fast, we talk to everyone about you can't get things perfect. You're not going to have all the information that you need. You're not going to have everything lined up perfectly, but you do need to keep moving on it. So that's why we talk. I guess I really love that phrase, progress not perfection, because I think anyone who's entrepreneur, anyone's growing a business, kind of just needs to keep things moving.
Yeah, when you look in and out and around you, who are the people that have inspired you along the way?
So I think definitely my parents, which I've talked about a lot, just with, I guess, really trying to build that better life for us and all their hard work. And my dad, he had to drop out of school when he was 13 to work. But that never stopped his passion for learning, and he's always, you know, he taught himself how to read and write in Chinese, in Vietnamese, in English, and just that ongoing passion to learn. So definitely them. And then my sister, just because her and I've been on this journey together, and we're really complementary skills, and she's got a lot of integrity and strength, which I really admire.
What skills does she have that you don't, and vice versa? How do you complement each other?
So when I had my epiphany, about being a salesperson, she kind of found the opposite thing, which she's really great with dealing with the opposite side. So the kind of the suppliers and the manufacturers and stuff like that. And so we've kind of noticed it's kind of a yin and yang, where I'm push and she's pull. So yeah. I feel like that's one of the things that we've really acknowledged in our relationship, and it hasn't been easy, and it didn't come overnight. Like, we've had lots of screaming arguments, you know. Try not to have it in front of other team members, but, you know, we're sisters.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
And just growing that relationship over time, and really understanding what our strengths are, and playing to those strengths, and not you know, not being nitpicky, and not acting like siblings, you know, because you have a different relationship with your siblings.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm watching Succession on Binge at the moment, which is about
I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, check it out. It's really, I'm really enjoying it. But it's about a uber crazy rich family in the States, but they're all absolutely bat-poo crazy, like absolutely crazy. But it's always on, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're always on talking about business. There's birthday parties, it's business. Like,
yeah.
How do you, you know, you and Nancy are talking, I'd imagine, most days,
yeah,
or all day, every day.
Yeah.
How do you Does it ever, like, how does that work? Do you ever switch off and just?
Yeah, be sisters. Mm. It's taken a while to get there, and we had a couple of really big blow-ups, and then we went and spoke to a third party and got a little bit of counselling, set up some rules, because we live a couple of streets away from each other. We were sharing care at one stage. We were driving into work together, driving home together. Like, and she had a key to my house. She would just rock in, come into my house whenever. Like, so it was. And I look back now and think, oh wow, that was really full on. I wonder why we were fighting.
Yeah.
But we put some rules in place and stopped going into work together and we're more professional acting with each other, but then we'd also be able to go, you know, let's go out for dinner and we're only going to talk about work for the first half an hour, and then we'll just, you know, hang out. And just having those kind of conversations has really, or rules, has really helped our relationship and our friendship. So she's one of my best friends.
How cool. That's a great realisation to actually, you know, sit down and go, okay, I reckon we need some help here.
Yeah. And like I said, it wasn't been easy. There's been lots of tears, blow-ups, that kind of thing. When you're working so closely with someone who's also your sister, it's, yeah.
Yeah. What about, like, your own professional development and capability as a business owner and leader? How have you worked on that over time?
Yeah, so I think that's probably where I feel a bit like imposter syndrome, where I think, oh, what do I need? Do I need to go back and study? Do I need to go and, I don't know, do a course or something? But I feel like a lot of the learning has been on the job and learning through my peers as well. Yeah.
Nice. I've got one more question. What's next on your to-do list?
World domination. We really want to make Asian food easy for everyone, and we're exploring, I guess, how that happens. Like, we would love to be the brand that everyone thinks of when they think Asian food. It doesn't matter if it's in the freezer, or it's on the pantry, if it's in the sauce aisle, wherever it is. And that's a really, really big, ambitious vision that we have, but which we're still very, very far away from. So that's kind of where we're heading.
What is your strategy to push that?
Got to get to that still.
You've got the vision.
Got the vision. Need strategy next.
Yeah. Well, hey, Lucy, thank you so much for carving some time out of your crazy busy schedule to come and talk to Nick and I in the studio here. It has been fascinating. It's I think, an amazing feat to, be told for years that you're going to do and be a certain person, and to have the realization that when that opportunity struck, you said, "Well, I can do this."
Yeah.
And what you've been able to make happen is just amazing. You should be super proud of what you've done. So, again, thank you so much. And for your dad, daughters do count.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucy. Love this place. Love this place. Love this
place. Love this place. Gotta love Lucy.
Yeah, you sure do. Tell me, Blake.
Yeah.
Would you be able to run a business with your siblings?
Now, that's a very good question. I think I would, as long as they just did everything I told them to do.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. Every day, just give them a checklist, write it, do this. Oh, no, actually, we've always got along pretty well, so I think we'd be okay. What about you?
I think so long as we clearly divided the roles. Yeah. I think if we're both trying to do the same thing, it'd just be a nightmare.
Yeah.
I know best. No, I know best.
Yeah. No, that's true. That is a very good tip.
So, and we had you and I had this conversation. How do you do your dumplings?
Yeah. Well, in my mind, there's only one way to do a dumpling, and that is you got to fry them up a little bit in the pan first. Get the fried bit, and then a bit of water in there, and steam them up in your pan. What about you?
You're doing it all wrong. You just steam it first, then you crisp it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, get Lucy on the phone. Oh, because I don't think that's... Is that right?
Well, that's the way I do it.
Wow. Not sure you're right.
You're wrong, I'm right.
Yeah. Okay. The thing about Lucy, what I found was fascinating is that throughout her whole life, throughout her teenage years and in her early 20s, all she wanted was four kids.
Yeah.
Had one and then said, okay, what else is there?
Yeah, amazing, right?
Mm. And it was interesting, I think, and she it didn't really come across in the podcast, but her mum and dad, some courage to be had when you're not handing down the reins to the son, which happens in many, many organisations in Asian culture. So a good leap of faith there, and isn't it amazing what they've been able to do with the business, Lucy and Nancy, over just the course of last 4 years?
Yeah, it is quite incredible. Courageous in what they're doing, and they've got a vision and they're pushing hard for it.
Yeah, well, as Lucy said, she does the push and Nancy does the pull.
Yeah.
They've worked out, as you said, you know, what's the clear delineation of who does what. The other thing that I really liked was, you know, when you're in that sort of a business, that size of a business, and it's all about growth, focus on progress and not perfection.
Mm. People do get caught up in the perfection piece, don't they? In fact, that can actually be quite debilitating for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I certainly haven't taken that approach to life.
I don't know, you've got a pretty clean house.
That's true, I do. Okay, mate. Well, there was Lucy Doolander. We hope you really enjoyed that episode. Drum roll. Who is on the next episode of the Doolanders, Nick?
It is the one and only podcast hero of mine, Kelly Reardon.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about Kelly.
Well, most people would know in Australia the podcast Conversations by the ABC. And she was the founding producer of Conversations and now runs her own podcast studio, Dead Set Studios.
And her own podcast in Curveball.
She does.
After you've listened to the Doolanders, you can flick over to Curveball. Anyway, can't wait for that one.
Bye for now.
Ciao.